You know, Galatians 5 says, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things, there is no law. So today, the fruit of the Spirit is kindness. I mean, God's kindness, it should echo through our lives in order to bless the lives of others. But what does it mean to be kind? I mean, I loved the Calvin and Hobbes comic strips because there's a little bit of, I think, every one of us, in every one of us, that there's this mischievous six-year-old Calvin has. You know, one cartoon shows him chewing a huge wad of bubble gum during class. His teacher, Miss Wormwood, uses the age-old line, "Calvin, do you have enough for everybody?" And struggling to talk with his mouth so full, he says, "I think so, but I don't know if they'd want it." You know, sharing is a part of kindness, although most people draw the line in sharing bubblegum. But is that all there is to this particular fruit of the Spirit? Or let me ask you this. If you're a Christian, is it ever appropriate to say no to a request? I mean, is that being unkind? Can a person ever be too kind? You know, therefore, while Tuesdays was designated Random Acts of Senseless Kindness Day. Now, there was a radio station that suggested that people find various ways to express kindness to others while having no ulterior motive. I mean, like put a quarter in somebody's parking meter. Share your umbrella on a rainy day. Let somebody go in front of you at the checkout line. Now, whoever came up with this idea recognized that we hear enough about senseless crimes, random violence. What we need is more kindness. You know, from children in the classroom to families in the living room, from co-workers at the office to strangers on a street corner, from candidates during an election to bargain hunters at a yard sale, I think the world needs more kindness today. You know, random acts of senseless kindness. I mean, it is a good idea, but we need more than that. See, kindness is needed every day, not just one day a year. It's needed consistently in relationships, not just in random at random with strangers. We are to perform acts of kindness for a purpose. I mean, to meet needs, not just senselessly. I mean, Proverbs 11:17 says, "A kind man benefits himself, but a cruel man brings trouble on himself." Ephesians 4:32 insists, "Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as Christ God forgave you." And 1 Thessalonians 5:15 adds, "Make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always try to be kind to each other." This morning, as we've done every week in this series, we're going to look at Jesus as our model. Now, three quick glimpses at three of his miracles will offer some insight when it comes to expressing kindness. So, first of all, we see that kindness often goes against human nature. See, it's unfortunate but true that thoughtfulness proves counterculture to the way many people live. You know, I was at a football scrimmage a while back, and I overheard a dad from the other team holler at his son, "Hey, get in there and punish somebody." Now, I'm all for hitting hard in football, but his choice of words struck me as interesting. I mean, punish somebody. See, we live in a very competitive dog-eat-dog, do unto others before they do unto you kind of culture. And this first picture of Jesus shows him confronted by a desperate woman. Mark chapter 7, if you want to turn there, but Mark chapter 7, verses 24 through 25, it says, "Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it. Yet he could not keep his presence secret. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an evil spirit came and fell at his feet." If you ever had a small child seriously ill, you can relate to how this woman maybe must have felt. I mean, it's one thing to have a sick parent or a spouse or a friend. I mean, that can be both frightening and exasperating, but there's something especially traumatic about the pain of a child. But there's something especially traumatic about that. I mean, they don't fully understand what is happening to them. I mean, we have trouble knowing how to comfort them. I mean, there's a thought always back in the back of your mind, you know, maybe I wish it were me instead. You know, in that video, that song we heard, Mark Schultz song, we saw, it's actually of a father praying for his son who is critically ill. Now, the dad concludes by saying, "He's not just anyone, he's my son." Now, I don't know exactly how this evil spirit came upon the child in our text here, or exactly what her symptoms were. But there's no doubt this mother was frantic, was concerned. And yet, in the midst of her desperation, news came that Jesus was in town. And by this time, he's gained quite a reputation for his miraculous healings. Sure, he's a Jew, and she knows her nationality is a hindrance, but it's surely worth a try. And so she comes to the house where he's staying, and she barges in on him. Now, I don't know how else to put this, but you see, he slipped into town not really wanting anybody to know that he was there. And he's been facing opposition in Galilee, and he needs a break. He wanted an opportunity just to be alone with his disciples. He needed some downtime away from the crowds. Yet, when this woman brought her critical need to him, Jesus sacrificed his schedule and took time for her. And immediately we recognize this lesson. Kindness may be inconvenient. I mean, let's face it, crises rarely come up at an opportune time. I mean, it's hard to schedule interruptions. I mean, that's the whole point. They're interruptions. I mean, and when we're stressed out or maybe worn out, it just gets tougher. Our thoughts usually turn inward and when our resources are kind of depleted. However, the reality is that Jesus focused on others, even when he had the every right to be thinking about himself, even when he felt used up. So how can we cultivate that kind of attitude? You know, the golden rule says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Rather than reacting when a need arises or when we're interrupted, it might help to stop and ask ourselves, how would I like to be treated? It may be in this situation. How would I like to be ministered to if I were in his shoes? I mean, what would Jesus do? Now, in general, when it comes to expressing kindness, maybe we should evaluate what would make us feel loved and valued at any given moment. And then maybe we do that for somebody else instead. I mean, like husbands, it might be we fix a soft drink or a meal for our wives when we wish they'd do it for us. Or wives, it might mean go to your husband's softball games once in a while so that you can watch him attempt to relive his glory days. Now, for all of us, it might mean doing a job around the house that we wish somebody else would take care of it. Or maybe serving at church in an area that gets little recognition. See, the whole concept of servant leaderhood is that servant leadership is that we never say, well, that's not my job description, but rather when we see a need, we meet it. See, this woman's interruption, while understandable, was not what Jesus had in mind, but he was still kind to her. Now, listen what James wrote in James chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. He says, suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to him, go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about his physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accomplished by action, is dead. See, when we see a need, we ought to help. However, the Apostle Paul, he clarifies in 2 Thessalonians 3:10, he says, for even when we were with you, we gave you this rule. If a man will not work, he shall not eat. See, kindness doesn't mean we foolishly give money to every person who sticks their hand out. See, people need to be taught responsibility and a strong work ethic. And it is not good stewardship to carelessly give to those who are taking advantage. But having said that, it also needs to be pointed out that when we're in doubt whether the need is legitimate or not, it's better to err on the side of generosity. You know, 1 Corinthians 6:7 says it's better to be wronged and cheated than to cheat and do wrong. See, sometimes kindness, it's inconvenient, even uncomfortable, but it's still vital. Now, kindness also forces us to overcome barriers. Verse 26 of our text says, the woman was a Greek born in Syrian Phoenicia. In other words, she was a Gentile. Now, it goes on, she begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. First, let the children eat all they want, he told her, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. Yes, Lord, she replied, but even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. Then he told her, for such a reply, you may go. The demons have left your daughter. She went home and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone. Now, what on earth was Jesus talking about? I mean, not taking the children's bread and giving it to their dogs? Well, Jews often referred to Gentiles as dogs. So Jesus was pointing out that his ministry was to the children first, I mean to the Jews, not to the Gentile dogs like she happened to be. But why would Jesus talk to her this way? I mean, as I studied this text, I learned that the word Jesus used here for dog was not the customary one. Well, while the Jews, they often used the term for Gentiles that denoted wild dogs of the street, Jesus used a word that referred to a house dog, a beloved pet. Now, I realize that still not exactly a compliment, but Jesus was, I think he was intentionally using a play on words here. You see, it's likely this woman that she expected him to ignore or even mistreat her. I mean, that would have been the typical response. However, she heard there was something different about Jesus, and her daughter was desperate, so she decided to take the chance. Well, Jesus, he did respond in a way similar to that of other Jews that she met, and yet his choice of words, and I think maybe the tone of his voice, maybe gave her hope. I mean, when she answered, but even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. Her answer showed that I think she picked up on maybe his wordplay. She realized he has chosen the word very specifically. I mean, her response also demonstrated perseverance and faith. And so with a smile on his face and maybe a twinkle in his eye, maybe Jesus met her need. I mean, she went home and she found her little girl miraculously healed. I mean, it was true. I mean, he did come to minister to the Jews first, but not to the Jews only. I mean, Jesus responded to this woman's need in compassion and kindness. He saw past their differences and met her at the point of her need. Folks, the church ought to be the one place where the Spirit of God breaks down barriers such as racial discord and prejudice. I mean, when people are in Christ and filled with His Spirit, radical racial distinctions become irrelevant. You know, actually, Galatians 3:28 says, there is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. See, the church needs to show the world that the love of Christ is bigger than man's bias and hostilities. And so the first glimpse of Christ's kindness includes a reminder that we treat people who are different from us with dignity and respect, even when it's inconvenient. But we learn, secondly, that kindness begins with true empathy. I mean, it's important for us to understand that others are really going through what others are really going through if we're going to show them Christ-like kindness and compassion. I mean, folks, true kindness begins when we really seek to understand how other people are feeling. You know, Mark chapter 7, it offers us another glimpse of Jesus' incredible kindness. Look at verse 31. It says, then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon down to the Sea of Galilee and to the region of the Decapolis. There some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged him to place his hand on the man. You know, Helen Keller, she once said if she had a choice between being blind or being deaf, she would choose to be blind. See, blindness cuts you off from things, but deafness alienates you from people. See, this man in our text, he may have been intelligent and had a great personality, but his disability cut him off from most relationships. See, in that day, it's likely that he'd never learned to read or write. And any sign language he used would probably be primitive at best. See, he kind of probably lived in a world all to himself. Yet Jesus was sensitive to how he felt. In fact, that's another important lesson. Kindness protects the feelings of others. Look at verse 33. In verse 33 it says, After he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. Now first, Jesus took him aside. I think he understood that the man was uncomfortable, that he felt like he was on display. So rather than grandstand the miracle by making a scene, he sought to protect the man's privacy by stepping out of that limelight. He refused to make a spectacle of him just to gain an audience. Now understand, Jesus didn't always heal in private, though. I mean, there were times when miracles were done right out in the open. I mean, they were intentionally done to demonstrate his deity. But Jesus was so sensitive to this man's feelings that he did it differently this time. You know, football coach Dan Reeves, he once says, "You can tell the character of a man by the way he treats those who can do nothing for him." See, Jesus was always kind. Now, he also showed sensitivity to this man's feelings by communicating with him in a way that he could understand. I mean, rather than using words which the man couldn't hear, Jesus touched him. I mean, even though this sounds kind of disgusting to us, Jesus spit onto his finger and touched the man's tongue. Now, apparently in ancient times, saliva was thought to have a curative power. And when Jesus did this, it became clear to the deaf man that Jesus was about to perform a miracle. See, before Jesus actually healed him, we learn another important lesson. I mean, kindness feels the pain of others. And that's what empathy is all about. I mean, look at verse 34. In verse 34, it says, Jesus looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him, "Ephphatha," which means be open. See, Jesus looked up to heaven to demonstrate the source of his power. And then he sighed. I mean, in fact, the text says that he sighed deeply. I mean, why did he sigh? Now, this is only speculation, but I think seeing the man's need, Jesus was suddenly overwhelmed by the suffering world. See, if confronted him in the face of his audience every day, it really did. I mean, and yet, something about this man reminded Jesus in a powerful way just how much a gentle touch, maybe an act of mercy, and a few kind words were so desperately needed by those he had come to save. I mean, we live in a hurting world. A preacher once said, "When you're preaching on Sunday mornings, remember there's a broken heart in every pew." See, people who are kind have the ability to feel others' pain. They put themselves in other people's shoes and identify with the hurt. I mean, that's why they're so eager to do something to help. Now, on the other hand, people who are unkind, they lack ability or have squelched the ability to relate to the hurts of others. They don't think about anybody but themselves. Now, as we look at how Jesus turned this man's life around, we're also reminded that kindness compels us to help when we can. Look at verse 35. In verse 35, it says, "At this, the man's ears were open, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly." See, Jesus spoke but a single command, "Ephphatha, be opened." And immediately the man could hear, both hear and speak. I mean, the words he longed to say, it just came tumbling out of his mouth. Maybe the sounds that he only imagined suddenly was restored to his brain or registered to his brain. I mean, like music, laughter, conversation, birds singing, crickets chirping, maybe even the teaching in the synagogue. But the word, maybe even the words, "I'd love you." See, all were available for him following one moment of kindness from the Savior. Now, maybe you're thinking, you know, I'd love to be able to do that. I mean, if only I could miraculously heal people, I would be kind to everybody I met. I mean, you know, forget about holding a Benny Hinn healing crusade at a convention center. You know, maybe I'd just go to the hospital and start emptying beds. But you know what Jesus said? Be faithful with a little, and then I'll give you more responsibility. See, folks, if you aren't being kind to people now with the gifts that you already have, it's not likely that you're going to be kind if you have this miraculous spiritual gift. See, we may never be able to touch a deaf man and heal him instantaneously. But you know what? We can all show that man compassion. We can treat him with respect. We can try to understand his needs. And we can do all that we can do to integrate him into God's family, even though he has a disability. See, empathy is a part of kindness. Now, a final glimpse at Jesus reminds us that kindness requires perseverance. Mark chapter 8, verse 1 through 3. Says, "During those days, another large crowd gathered. Now, since they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, 'I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will collapse on the way, because some of them have come a long distance.'" See, this crowd had been with Jesus, listening to him preach, watching him heal the sick, for 3 days, and if they brought any food at all, by now it was long gone. I mean, they were hungry, and out of compassion, Jesus wanted to feed them. Now, I think the disciples, in a patronizing tone of voice, explained to Jesus that there was no way possible to provide a meal for so many people. I mean, where could they possibly find enough food in such a remote place? So Jesus asked, "What do you have to offer them?" And they managed to scrounge up 7 loaves of bread and a few small fish. And satisfied, Jesus instructed the crowd to sit down. He blessed the food, disciples passed it out, and miraculously some 4,000 people got a free lunch that day. Now, two quick thoughts strike me about this miracle as it pertains to kindness and maybe the need to persevere. One is that kindness is often mundane. See, it's one thing to be a celebrity and visit an orphanage or maybe a cancer ward when the cameras are rolling. Now, it's another thing to serve a meal to a homeless shelter or stop to help somebody change a flat tire or pick up groceries for a shut-in when nobody else can see you or give you applause. You know, actually, William Barclay, in his commentary, suggests that kindness is a virtue which never forgets the details of life. You know, a hungry crowd is a very exciting need. I mean, it's not nearly as dramatic and frantic as a frantic mother with a demon-possessed child, or maybe a deaf man who can hardly speak. Sometimes it's easier to be kind when it's a big thing. I mean, when there's a flood or hurricane or tornado, communities, they often rally to the occasion, at least at first. I mean, when a family suffers a tragic death, the outpouring of love is often overwhelming for a while. You know, the number of blood donations following 9/11 was enormous. However, today, blood banks are once again begging for donors. Now, I'm not disputing that kindness is essential in times of crises. But I wonder how eager we are to help those who face ordinary run-of-the-mill needs. You know, columnist Cal Thomas, back in 1995, he wrote a column. It was entitled, "More Than Politics." And I thought that was kind of appropriate for what we're in today in our political time. But he wrote, "We suffer in America not from a failure of political organization or power, but a failure of love. The way to transform a nation is not by politics alone. It is not enough to support a welfare reform bill. We must also mentor the children of poverty who live without fathers and without hope. It is not enough to fight the gay rights lobby. We must confront AIDS patients preparing for a lonely death. It is not enough to support a constitutional amendment banning abortion. We must provide young women in trouble with a home and a sympathetic ear." See, kindness applies to everyday mundane needs as well as the huge once-in-a-lifetime emergencies. Now again, it was Cal Thomas who said, "Love talked about is easily ignored. Love demonstrated is irresistible." And the final lesson pertaining to kindness is that it must be ongoing in nature. You know, the miracle in Mark 8 here is known as the feeding of the 4,000. Now, just two chapters back in Mark chapter 6, we read about the feeding of the 5,000 that Jesus pulled off with five loaves and two fishes. See, hunger was a need that wouldn't go away. See, this wasn't like the deaf man suddenly regaining his hearing or this little girl that's being delivered from the power of a demon. Their problems was gone for good. But this crowd, they would be hungry again, and maybe in a matter of hours. See, it was a need that couldn't be restored with just one meal. Now, often the reward of kindness is another request for kindness. I mean, if we do something nice for someone, they often come back and ask again. I mean, if you give to a charity one year, they don't say the next year, "Hey, Ricky Wallace helped us last year. We won't bother him this year." They don't call and say, "Hey, you gave $20 last year. Would you consider just giving $10 this year?" I mean, you know as well as I do, they come back and they hope for more the next time. See, the real test of kindness comes in a repeat performance. We have to be willing to keep stepping in and keep helping out and keep meeting needs. Now, incidentally, there are times when we have to allow people to do for themselves, even if they struggle. I mean, we can do more harm than good by continuing to bail people out of every situation. I mean, refusing to allow them maybe to grow up and stand out on their own. I think sometimes the kinder thing we can do is say no. See, Jesus fed the 5,000 after a single afternoon. He didn't feed the 4,000 until they'd been with him for 3 days. See, he didn't come to earth just to feed large crowds. I mean, his fundamental purpose wasn't a chicken in every pot, a perpetual welfare program, or even an end to world hunger. He came as the bread of life to teach us that true nourishment is all about and to ultimately save us from our sins. That's what it's all about. But along the way, he showed us the kindness that is mandatory, even if it's inconvenient. Maybe that we must learn to empathize with others, even different from ourselves. And that kindness, like love, I think always perseveres. It never fails. Now, we're not talking this morning about earth-shattering events that make the front page of the paper or maybe the lead story on the news. We're talking about treating people the way Jesus did. We're talking about letting God's Spirit shine out of us so bright that the lives of those we come in contact with every day. I mean, we're simply talking about echoing the kindness of God. You know, in traffic, maybe someone needs to get in. Let them in. I mean, in church, someone needs to sit down. Move over. At work, someone needs help. Not your area. If you can, help them. At a restaurant, someone spills a drink. Maybe dodge it and then lend a hand to clean it up. At home, if you wear it, hang it up. If you drop it, pick it up. If it rings, answer it. If it howls, feed it. I mean, how often have you heard it said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care? You know, Tom Baudet, he provided that familiar voice on the Motel 6 commercials that assures us that we'll leave the light on for you. Well, he wrote a book, and in his book, As Far As You Can Go Without a Passport. Now, in that book, he tells about his grandma Hattie. Tom's mother grew up during the Depression, working hard at a dairy that his grandma and grandpa owned. Now, they lived near the train tracks, and because it was the Depression, hobos regularly came by looking for handouts as they made their way to nowhere in particular. Now, Grandma Hattie, she was glad to share what little that they had, but she always made sure that the bums, as she called them, washed milk cans or shoveled snow or did something helpful to earn their meal. See, apparently, Hattie's family got to be pretty popular on the hobo circuit. In fact, the hobos had a practice of scratching a white X with chalk on a gatepost of those houses where a guy could get a handout. And I mean, it was supposed to be a secret sign, but Grandma Hattie, she knew it was there. And she never bothered with a mark except once. It was the Sunday before Christmas. And on the way in from church, Hattie noticed that a rainstorm that day came and washed that white mark off that post. It turned cold that night, and the snow piled up during the afternoon. And Grandma and Grandpa, they sat in the front room watching hobos trudge past the house, but none of them were stopping. I mean, suddenly it hit her. The white X was gone. Now, some people might have been glad to have a little peace and quiet on the Sunday before Christmas, but not Grandma Hattie. I mean, she slipped on her overcoat, hiked out to the gate, and she put a huge white X on the post that nobody could possibly miss. Now, Tom Baudet ended this story by saying this. He says, I don't know what all this means, except that in this hard-hearted world we live in, we should always have a gatepost out front and go out and put a great big white X on that thing. See, the fruit of the Spirit is kindness. The fruit of the Spirit is kindness. And we, as followers of Jesus, we who have the Spirit in us, should echo those fruits. Let's pray.